Welcome to Federally Insights. This month, we're discussing identity governance, sponsored by SailPoint Technologies. Now, here's your host, Tom Temin.
Homeland Security technologists are embracing biometrics more and more in their identification needs. With the recent establishment of using facial recognition in some airports, it's now clear the department sees biometrics playing a bigger role in identity management. To hear more on the subject, Federal News Radio's Jason Miller spoke with Arun Vimuri from the Homeland Security Department's Science and Technology Directorate, where he's director of the Biometrics Technology Engine.
Basically, DHS is one of the largest users of biometric technologies in the world. But as biometric technologies continue to improve and change over time, the number of applications and use cases, not only within DHS, but within the larger Homeland Security enterprise, becomes more broader. So, like, for example, a lot of times, biometrics were really limited to law enforcement applications for booking of people, so because, you know, fingerprints take a long time to collect. Now they're faster and easier. So what ends up happening is the number of applications where you can cost-effectively use biometrics significantly increases. Our goal is to help support the sharing of information, to help get organizations smarter on how the technologies really work, what's available, and what might be the right use of different technologies over time, so that we each individual entity or organization doesn't have to go through the learning curve in a slow way.
Fascinating. Now, absolutely. I was at a recent FCA event where they talked a lot about identity management, and biometrics came up time and again, and not just, as you said, fingerprints, but really facial recognition, iris. They're even talking about facial recognition at a distance. So definitely a hot topic. Talk a little bit about what you guys are doing right now. What are some of the things you're working on that's, if you will, most exciting, specifically around biometrics and as it relates back to identity management?
Sure, absolutely. So as you know, there are a lot of different biometric modalities and a lot of ways that they can be applied. Fingerprints are one. Facial recognition in general is another. Other ones we're looking at are things like iris and voice to help support different applications or use cases. What it's fair to say is, you know, there is no one perfect biometric modality. It really comes down to what are you trying to use it for, what are the needs of the specific operation, so you can find the right set of technologies that fit. Once upon a time, we were very limited. We were, you know, it was fingerprints because it had always been fingerprints. Now, with the improvements of technology, we can actually take a much closer look at the applicability of iris and facial recognition, or in some cases, it's actually about loosening the constraints on the collection, too. So you talked about face versus face at a distance. Well, face at a distance is definitely a harder problem, not only because you have to go farther, but, you know, you can obviously put lenses and you can try to correct for atmospheric distortion, but the person may not be looking at the camera. And traditionally, facial recognition, you need to be within a few degrees of, you know, a few degrees of center if you're trying to get a good photo. But now algorithms have gotten better, so they can accommodate, you know, the real world. You don't need to be sitting in front, so you don't need to be sitting. You don't need to be sitting in front of a grayscale background. You don't need to be, you know, about 2 or 3 feet from the actual camera lens. You can accommodate not only operational conditions, but also user behavior. So one of the things we've actually been looking quite a lot at is how to make the systems more cost-effective in operation. And what usually happens is when you put a technology out, people don't actually understand how to use it. And these errors start to accumulate. So people don't know how to present to the device. That, you know, they may not be very familiar with biometric technology. And what ends up happening is it takes longer. There's more error. Now you need to get people involved to help rectify it. So now you've got additional staffing and labor costs. So you don't actually achieve those cost benefits we talked about before, where you have better security. So now we can say, okay, we can get better security, but we can also lower the price point by making these things faster, more intuitive, and easier to use, not only for operators, but for people who are interacting with the technology, who might be members of the public.
I think that's a fascinating example, because one of the things with biometrics, and we're seeing this with things as simple as the iPhone and other smartphone devices, is they're adding that facial recognition, they're adding the thumbprint, and people now are starting to get that in their everyday lives. Talk a little bit about this biometrics and the influencing and kind of how it's really changing the physical, logical access and the strategies behind that.
So that's a really good question. What I would say is over the last couple of years, what we've seen is a significant improvement in the way we collect biometrics, but also in how we match them. So the way I kind of think about this is we all took, you know, a lot of us took economics at some point, you know, like maybe like a 101 class, and we heard about things like supply and demand, and, you know, there were these trade-offs. Well, historically, we've kind of seen that between security and facilitation, right? Security and, you know, ease of use and things like that. Usually really secure systems can sometimes be really hard to use, right, and vice versa. But what we've seen is such an improvement in the technologies that we can actually see something that's far more secure and far more convenient and easy to use as well. Now, is there still a trade-off between really convenient technologies and secure technologies? Yes. But it comes down to how you tailor your or design your system to support that specific need or operational use case. You know, so for example, if I'm a theme park operator, I don't want to turn off my users by accidentally saying they're not the person they're supposed to be, right? Similarly, if I'm the U.S. government, I might be focused far more on security if I'm trying to do some sort of background checks on people, right, who are applying for security clearances. I don't want to get that wrong. So there's always this kind of trade-off between security and facilitation. These things also start to apply to other needs. So as biometrics makes its way out of mostly government applications but into commercial spaces or financial services, these are things that can start to be incorporated. And a lot of folks are looking at doing this by, you know, like the great thing about the mobile device is I can verify to that using my face. I can verify to my device using my fingerprint. And that helps to kind of make it a more convenient process than the password. However, you know, none of these things are perfect. I can't necessarily, first of all, take that face and then use that for a background check, right? That's not how these systems work. And many of the designers of these systems, of the handset manufacturers, they're very security or they're very privacy conscious. So the data doesn't actually ever leave the device. So even though you might be using your fingerprint to log into your banking app, the verification of your identity using the biometric only happens on board the phone. It never goes back to the central repository. So they build their systems where they trust the phone enough in order to make that work. So as we kind of go forward here, it really comes down to what are the costs or what are the security risks associated with making an error either by saying this we believe this is a rune and it turns out it's not really a rune, or we say, hey, this is not a rune, it really was. And you can kind of do the trade-off between those and figure out what's the right combination of technologies, both for physical access and for logical security.
And you go back to this idea of this comes down to costs and security risks and understanding both sides of it. Is that the biggest challenge that we're facing right now with biometrics? Is yes, you can authenticate to that device and you can verify your identity to that device, but can you go a step further? And what is the cost and the security risks once you begin to go further? Is that what you guys, because you guys do so much research and so much, if you will, looking into the future, you don't really stay today too much in Science and Technology Directorate. Is that the problem you're starting to study?
So that is one of the problems we're trying to study, is trying to figure out how we can continue to make the technologies more cost-effective to support different operations. If you think about it, anytime you are, you know, something, you have access to something, or you're trying to get on board a plane, or you're trying to do something, and it's based off of who you are, right, there is a potential role for biometrics to come into play. The challenge is based off of the amount of time, based off of the acceptance for error, based off of various costs, it may not always fit. So one of the things we're trying to do is trying to make the technology more accommodating to people, to the users, a better fit, to better support the real-world operational conditions, and to make it more cost-effective so that it can be more widely adopted where it needs to be, and then that's not the primary issue around implementation. There are a lot of other questions or things that still need to be worked through. Like there are questions about, obviously, that are not even technology based. They're just how do people feel about the expanded use of biometric technologies, right? Because there are security, cybersecurity implications. There are privacy implications. There are questions about a number of different factors that people want to make sure they understand how it really works as we start employing it and deploying it. But really, it's the funny thing is the large driver here has been that a lot of folks have figured out how to make these technologies very convenient, and that's just one of the reasons why you're seeing a lot of adoption not only in the handset space, but you're seeing biometrics take the place of passwords and PINs in many applications too.
It's funny you talk about the need to replace password and PINs. If you remember, both this administration and previous ones have talked about the need to kill the password dead, and people have kind of put out biometrics as that hope. Is that why maybe logical access right now is maybe a little bit ahead of physical access, or how would you rank them if you had to?
So I think the way I, you know, traditionally when we look at, think about these things in terms of identity management, usually it's kind of broken down into three areas. You know, what you have, which might be like a secure credential or, you know, some sort of RFID token, an ATM card, a credit card. What you know, which is the PIN, right, some sort of secret that hopefully only you know. And then what you are, which is more along the lines of the biometrics. And these things are some of the major things that we look at when we think about any sort of verifying identity, either to provide logical access control or physical access control. And I think what it's, again, it's fair to say that it's not clear that there's any one silver bullet or one will become the silver bullet. There's always kind of these trade-offs between what you know, what you have, and what you are. So I expect that for some period of time, we'll continue to see this growth towards multi-factor authentication, where you're using some combination of those different factors to help verify people. I don't think passwords will go away, like, you know, tomorrow, but it may go away in the relatively, you know, at some point in the future. But it won't go away quickly, it'll really come down to a lot of other factors. Because just as we talk about, the nice thing about passwords is hopefully, you know, if you actually come up with a strong password, and a lot of folks have difficulty with this, it's something that's secret. One thing that people don't realize with biometrics is technically they're not secret. We walk around and we show our face to the world. We leave our fingerprints all over everything we touch. So there are security implications there too. Can that information that is just publicly available, can that somehow be exploited? So, you know, these are things that have to be considered when we look at the risks and the benefits of using any number of different technologies to help identify people.
That's Arun Vamore, Director of the Biometrics Technology Engine at the Homeland Security Department's Science and Technology Directorate, speaking with Federal News Radio's Jason Miller. Hear the second part of that interview after a quick break. I'm Tom Temin.
Go beyond the PIV card and secure your agency with identity governance. Security doesn't stop at the front door. You need governance over who has access to systems and data in your agency. SailPoint Technologies, the leader in enterprise identity governance, invites security professionals to ID.gov on January 25th in Washington, D.C. Learn how government officials solve their security challenges by using the power of identity. Learn how you can attend. Visit info.sailpoint.com/gov. That's info.sailpoint.com/gov.
Biometrics still carry a lot of questions. Knowing how to best utilize their identification capabilities, that's a constant one for Arun Vamore, Director of Homeland Security's Biometric Technology Engine. He tells Federal News Radio's Jason Miller how the group wants to help agencies and the private sector understand where biometrics can and can't help them achieve their mission success.
A lot of our work for the last couple of years has been focused on specific operations or specific missions. With the biometric technology engine, we're trying to help broaden some of those horizons, specifically to answer those questions. So we're doing more things, and we're engaging industry in different ways to help out answer some things like provide better feedback to industry on what seems to work and what doesn't, find opportunities to kind of help put together some state-of-the-art demonstrations so that DHS or other federal users can have a better understanding of, oh, this is what actually could be possible. Because sometimes reading about it or seeing something like a white paper, you don't get all the details, you don't get the nuances, you don't see how the technology really works. So one of the things we've been working on is something actually called the Biometrics Technology Rally. It's something we're going to be hosting in March, so in about 2 months. And what we were trying to do there is show how there's actually a lot of similarity between different requirements, and this is mostly oriented towards physical access control. Where we want to kind of get industry to think more about the usability and the high throughput of these different applications, rather than purely here's the cost and here's the accuracy of the matching algorithm. What we found through a lot of our testing is some of these matching algorithms are great, but a lot of times they don't even, you know, people have difficulty using it in the first place. The analogy I think about is, you know, like if my grandmother interacted with this system, would she know what to do? Would she be able to complete the tasks? And generally speaking, the answer is usually no, because, you know, unfortunately, a lot of these systems are designed by engineers for the way they think people think. But that's not really how people interact with technology. People learn technology at different rates, and they pick off of different cues. So what we're doing with this biometrics rally, for example, is to say, okay, industry, we want to achieve this really fast throughput in this operation. We're going to give you 7 feet by 8 square feet of space. We're going to run something with between 300 to 500 people through your process. We're going to measure the amount of time it takes. We're going to measure how often you can give us a good face image or a pair of iris images. We're going to measure how well those images that you sent us actually match. Right, but you get to pick whatever combination of technologies you want to put in there and whatever form factor it is to get people to look at the camera or look in the direction or behave a certain way to facilitate the biometric capture. The intent is to help provide better feedback to industry about this is how people really interact with your technology, so that they get an understanding of how they can continue to improve on not only just a better camera, but a better user interface. We want to use this as a way for us to get a better understanding of what the state of the art is or what some of the creative thoughts are out there in industry on how to do these kind of problems and how people would try to approach it. And, you know, bring in federal stakeholders so that they can see, okay, this is really what the technology is capable of. They've been evaluated in a common and consistent way, so we're doing this for 12 different vendors, so it's a way for them to get a better sense of, oh, this is how it really works. Because, you know, on the government side, what we usually do get is some sort of white paper or proposal, and there's like one or two or three numbers, and we don't really know what's behind it or how it was measured or if it's really true. This is a way to get that kind of, you know, standardized information out so that we can compare apples to apples instead of knowing for sure that we're doing apples to oranges, but does it matter how much does it impact our choices?
That's a fascinating event. Is this something that's going to be open, I won't say to the general public, but to the general kind of federal public?
Yeah, actually, so it's something that we're open to for federal employees. So actually, if you want to learn more, you can take a look at our DHS S&T website. We can and you know, we can provide you with that link. We also have a link for the actual event itself, and that's at mdtf.org/rally.
You're listening to Arun Vamori, Director of the Biometrics Technology Engine at the Homeland Security Department's Science and Technology Directorate. He's speaking with Federal News Radio's Jason Miller. Hear more after this quick break. I'm Tom Temin.
Go beyond the PIV card and secure your agency with identity governance. Security doesn't stop at the front door. You need governance over who has access to systems and data in your agency. SailPoint Technologies, the leader in enterprise identity governance, invites security professionals to ID.gov on January 25th in Washington, D.C. Learn how government officials solve their security challenges by using the power of identity. Learn how you can attend. Visit info.sailpoint.com/gov. That's info.sailpoint.com/gov.
We continue now with our interview with Arun Vamori, Director of the Biometrics Technology Engine at the Department of Homeland Security's Science and Technology Directorate.
Now, Arun, I want to jump also over to one of the other issues that we've talked briefly about is mobile computing and kind of the expansion of the use of biometrics. One of the things about mobility, and we talked about this quite a bit, is the form factor it's coming in. There's really a push on the consumer side. How does that maybe influence what you guys are doing in the Science and Technology Directorate side?
Yeah, so that's a good question. So to be honest, you know, there are a biometric system is actually not that different from a lot of other IT or online systems. There are, you know, just it has a lot of similar cyber risks. So one of the questions, but there are some different risks, some different trade-offs, right? So let's say that I've got a website and I'm now, or an app, and now what I'm doing is I'm asking people to submit a username and a password, right? Well, you know, that might be susceptible to certain types of risks like brute force attacks or man-in-the-middle attacks or different things like that. If we talk about biometrics, now we have a slightly different set of risks. You might see things where people are trying to spoof fingerprints and create fake fingerprints. You might see things where people are trying to make faces. It wasn't too long after, you know, one of the major handset manufacturers came out with their facial recognition system, and you know, there was a company in Asia that said, "Hey, we figured out how to beat it." Right. So we're in this situation where, as technology comes out, and honestly, as it becomes more pervasive, more people will be incentivized to figure out how to beat it. Not only because it's there and it can be beaten, but also because, you know, the targets on the other side become more enticing. As this stuff starts to get used beyond government applications, but now for like financial services and other places where people could find a financial benefit, they are going to get more creative, more people are going to look at it, and they're going to try to figure out how to beat it. So there's going to be an ongoing a process where people are trying to make the technologies more secure, and on the other side, people are going to try to find out more innovative and creative ways to circumvent or beat the systems. So this is going to be something that's going to evolve over time, and I don't think we have a clear answer for this. So this is something that is something that's ongoing. There's lots of iterations, improvements that are happening literally on a weekly and monthly basis on some of these commercial technologies. So we're looking at how this will continue to evolve and shape, and it'll influence our ability to kind of solely rely on any one technology, which is one reason why, there's still value in looking at multi-factor authentication and not just picking a particular biometric technology.
And I think that was a great segue to this other part of the discussion I want to head into, is this really confidence that I've seen develop around not just fingerprint, which I think there's always been a fair amount of confidence in over the last, 30, 40, 50 years, but now iris and facial recognition also, and voice. And, we've even heard stories about, well, maybe you're typing, and it's not really necessarily considered, I'm not sure that's considered the traditional biometrics, but you have a pattern in the way you type, I have a pattern in the way I type, and that could be used for logical access too. Talk a little bit about what some of the things you guys are doing around iris, facial, and some of the other modalities as it fits into this broader idea of using biometrics for physical, for logical access.
Yeah, so good point. And I'll be a lot of our work to date has really been focused on fingerprint, iris recognition, and facial recognition technologies. And we're continuing to look at how these additional modalities may play a role in specific applications. Specifically voice, DNA, and then dynamic things that might be considered some combination of behavioral or physiological biometrics, like the way you sign your name. It's not necessarily just the signature itself. It's where you were touching the touchpad while you were signing it, because if you think about it, your signature is something that happens over time, right? The same thing with keyboard, like your use of the keyboard and how quickly or what keys you press in order to type out certain phrases. So there's a lot of opportunity here to use different aspects of biometrics. I've heard that people are looking at certain things even around mobile devices, where it might be how you hold your phone while you're interacting with it. You're right. There's a lot of sensors that are built into that. So it's not just about the data, the raw data that's produced out of it. There's a lot of metadata around the process that can help verify the identity or who people are. Earlier in the conversation, you put it out a really good example of, when you use the self-service gas station, you put in your credit card, and then it'll ask you your zip code or something like that. Well, so part of it is, you get your zip code, which is kind of a knowledge-based question or something that may not necessarily be secret, but something you know. But then others can even look at, okay, where is this transaction happening? Is this happening at the same gas station Arun is always at? Or is it happening something totally different? Because that may have a different risk profile. So I think what you're going to see is a lot of different information that comes in, some of it biometric, but some of it not. It might just be time information being applied to the biometric capture or the transaction information to help get a better understanding that this really is the person, who normally comes and interacts with our system on a mobile device.
Arun Vamori is director of the Biometrics Technology Engine at the Homeland Security Department's Science and Technology Directorate. Speaking with Federal News Radio's Jason Miller. We'll post the entire interview online at federalnewsradio.com/federalinsights. I'm Tom Temin.
Thank you for listening to Federal Insights Identity Governance, sponsored by SailPoint Technologies on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. The entire program can be found on demand at federalnewsradio.com. Search Identity Governance.